Dr. Jim Keeney. I'm here today interviewing Dr. John LaPuma, also known affectionately as Chef MD. He's written Chef MD's Big Book of Culinary Medicine, which you can buy now, and I'll put a link on the website for that. He's also written Cooking the Real Age Way and The Real Age Diet, which have been New York bestsellers, and also did the recipes for You, the Owner's Manual. Dr. LaPuma is an expert in the field of culinary medicine, and it's kind of going back to those roots of you are what you eat, something my parents always taught anyway, and they didn't even go to med school. But somehow, along the way, doctors have forgotten this fact. But before we talk to Dr. LaPuma, a quick word from our sponsor. Today's show is sponsored by Aveeno Baby. Aveeno Baby offers a complete line of baby skincare products to cleanse and moisturize baby's delicate skin. Aveeno Baby products are specially formulated with natural oat to provide daily care for baby's skin and to soothe and relieve dry skin. Aveeno Baby and Health Buzz, a perfect combination for your baby. We're back with Dr. John LaPuma. Hey, John, how you doing?
Good, Jim. How are you today?
I'm great. Glad to finally be talking to you on the phone here. And what I wanted to ask you first, when in your career did you realize that cooking and food was such a key part of medicine and that for you it was going to be your unique approach to curing disease?
You know, Jim, for me, it was personal and professional. I had gained a lot of weight as a young attending physician at Lutheran General in Park Ridge, Illinois, after I finished my fellowship in medical ethics and general internal medicine at the University of Chicago, and was helping to start ethics consultation in the hospital there. I had very sick patients, often near the end of life, and in my own internal medicine outpatient practice, I had relatively young patients who I thought looked a lot like my older patients in the hospital, except that they were a little younger, and they had just the beginnings of heart disease, of cholesterol problems, of diabetes, and so on. And I thought that I could do better than sending them to a dietitian and giving them pamphlets. And I myself needed to try to keep off the 30 pounds I'd just lost all the wrong way with rice crackers and grapefruit. And so I went to cooking school to learn how to make a healthy diet taste good and get some of the nutrition knowledge that I needed to bring back to medicine and to my medical practice.
You know, isn't it funny, though, that we get all the way through med school and most doctors don't know how to cook a healthy meal?
I think it's a skill that ought to be in the medical curriculum. There's no question about it. Now, I know the medical curriculum is a competitive place and it's a political debate as well. But the fact is that most chronic disease in the society is related to nutrition and lifestyle habits. Heart disease, stroke, many cancers are preventable with lifestyle measures. And we often see people a little too late in our medical offices to make that kind of difference. But I think if doctors knew more about, just a little more, about food and nutrition and actually how to make a healthy diet taste good, we'd do a little better. Some of us might even write prescriptions that had recipes on them.
That would be great, wouldn't it? Now, that's the problem is that we go through school and I learned that carbohydrates have 4 calories per gram and protein has 4 and fat has 9. But that doesn't really help you once you get into the kitchen and you start making food for your family.
It's because people don't eat nutrients. They don't eat carbs at 4 calories per gram or alcohol at 7 calories per gram. We eat broccoli. We drink red wine. We eat steak and chicken and tofu and fish. We use olive oil and nut oils. And each of these things often is more than simply a compilation of nutrients, which is one of the reasons it's so fascinating and so complex. Food is much more than an assemblage of nutrients and phytonutrients. It's many different compounds working together to affect biological and physiological processes, which result often in a real difference in how you feel and look and actually measurably become healthier with what you eat.
So it's quite an accomplishment, though, to go from understanding all those different aspects of what makes food healthy and then translating that into an edible diet that's actually tasty. You know, I know that's your specialty. That's what you've done. What would you recommend for the average physician who, say, family practice doc or internist, who really wants to get a better understanding and be able to give their patients some reasonable advice?
We've created a free tool for everyone to take advantage of that I'd love it if doctors signed up for. It's on chefmd.com, and it is a free, quick, easy, healthy recipe that I'll email to you every week with a complete nutritional analysis and with pictures and video if you like it, that you can forward to your patients and implant in your own newsletter, put on your own website, do whatever you like with, and just so that we get people eating food that's healthy and really tastes better than they thought possible. Now, if you want to go further than that in your own study as a physician, there are a number of texts that are helpful. There's a course that I teach each year at the University of Chicago in December on alternative medicine that Michael Roizen, now at the Cleveland Clinic, heads. And that's a terrific one-stop shop place to learn about the role of nutrition and food in medicine, particularly as a practical, easy, step-by-step approach that we like to think doctors can use in their practice and actually interest their patients in taking more control of their own disease processes.
Do you find that doctors are more, is it more resistance to the idea that pills aren't the solution in some cases, that actually changing your diet and food is the solution? Or do you think it's just a matter of laziness with doctors that it's easier to write a prescription for a pill in a 15-minute interaction with a patient rather than trying to teach them how to cook well?
You know, that's a really complicated question, Jim. The simple answer I would suggest is simply that doctors are very busy people. I mean, dozens of patients in the office every day. And most of us don't think about cooking the same way we think about surgery or medication. And of course, that makes a lot of sense. Medication is very targeted. Surgery is very targeted. Cooking is more general. Food is more general. But for doctors who think, you know what, there's something to this for basic conditions and where the peer-reviewed evidence base is really excellent, like in control of LDL cholesterol, the control of HDL cholesterol, the control of hemoglobin A1C and blood sugar, the control of even some more chronic diseases like gout and asthma and metabolic syndrome. For those of us who think, you know what, you can make a difference and our medications are effective, but they often have side effects and people forget to take them or they want to do something on their own, there's actually better and better data for doctors to take advantage of, not only on good websites like Medscape.com, for example, but also on our own website, ChefMD.com, and on RealAge.com, where the data has been peer-reviewed but is presented in a friendly way that you can use as little bites of knowledge that help to begin to educate both yourself and your patients.
So more like snack-size knowledge is what you're saying.
Snack-size, little bite. Get the skinny on it. It's just a little bite.
Okay.
And in our book, I cover, just in a broad umbrella, 40 different conditions, from acne to ulcerative colitis, with 50 foods and 50 easy recipes, 10 ingredients or less, 30 minutes or less, and 42 off-the-shelf menus, which take just 10 minutes each to prepare. But some of the hints inside of those are just so tantalizing to people that they want to know more. For example, if you marinate chicken, we're coming up on the 4th of July, not far from now,
Yeah. You
actually will cut cancer-producing heterocyclic amines, HCAs, by 90%.
Wow.
Just by forming that barrier between the chicken and the heat.
So it doesn't get charred.
Doesn't get charred or get very well done. Well done or very well done, much higher HCAs. Add rosemary, and rosemary is very high in antioxidants, tastes delicious in Mediterranean cuisine. You drop it by another 77%, according to the data. That's a very simple, practical, use a low-sugar marinade, by the way, because you don't want the caramelization to be the sugar in the marinade. You want to protect the meat so that it doesn't singe and burn. Some people like that crusty outside, but just bear in mind, it's carcinogenic. Cut it off. If you've got it there, just cut it off and go ahead and enjoy.
Is there a way to get that kind of crispy texture without causing the carcinogens?
There is. One easy way is to use breading. Breading and grilling don't usually go together, so you have to pan fry or pan saute. I like getting crispiness on the outside with vegetables instead. Portobello mushrooms will do that. Eggplant will do that. Grilled tomatoes, and actually coming into summer here, even grilled fruit. Grilled nectarine and grilled peaches drizzled with a little bit of honey and regatta as a dessert. It's just a knockout, and nobody expects it. They're incredible flavors. So if you're going to char your veggies instead.
Okay. Now, it sounds like a lot of this information is actually based on scientific evidence. This isn't just you deciding what makes sense. I'm sure that there's some level of that, but you sound like you have a lot of data behind these recipes.
for anybody who wants to know more, I did include 25 pages of peer-reviewed scientific references, most of which have been in the last 5 years, in the book, with several for each condition and for each food as well. Of course, this field is exploding, and that's actually one of the problems with it. People perceive that, gosh, you say one thing one day, and nutrition says something different the next day. Part of that is that the media loves a great story, and whatever will contradict yesterday is news today. Part of it also is that we're just really trying to understand how eating patterns work. And eating patterns, and here I'm talking about the Mediterranean diet, a low-fat diet, a low-carb diet, a vegetarian diet, a low-glycemic load diet, all of which are eating patterns. Eating patterns probably are more powerful than individual foods. And as people piece together the role that individual foods have in eating patterns, it becomes more clear how to prevent and in some cases control diseases with what we eat. Simple changes make a big difference. For example, store a watermelon at room temperature instead of in the fridge. You increase the beta carotene and the lycopene in that watermelon at room temperature by 82% if it's 70 degrees instead of 38 degrees in the fridge.
Does that mean that I can't put it in the fridge just before I eat it, to eat it cold?
Certainly you can. It takes 2 weeks for it to build up that 82% increased beta carotene and 40% increased lycopene. Absolutely. Chill it before you eat it. But just don't keep it there. Don't store it there because it will pit and fade and become kind of pinkish gray and you won't want to eat it.
The other thing I was going to ask you about is organics and this whole thing of organic products. Now, is this a marketing scam or is there really something to eating organic?
There really is something to eating organic. It's different for different fruits, vegetables, and meats, and for legumes. Food is as specific as the individual food, just like all cancers are really different. Lung cancer is not the same as breast cancer, except that they have neoplastic cells. Tofu is different than chicken, and they're the same only in that they both have protein. Organic is important because there is some data that for some fruits and vegetables, there's actually higher nutrient content, higher vitamin C content, higher phosphorus content in produce. And in others, there's even higher phytonutrient content. There's 3 times the lycopene in organic ketchup, for example, than there is in conventional ketchup. And organic ketchup is much less likely to have high fructose corn syrup in it, which is an extra source of sugar that nobody really needs. Conventional ketchup still often carries high fructose corn syrup. And the regulation around organics is not hugely strict, but it's better than it's been. So you can generally trust that it's not been raised with synthetic chemical fertilizers and fungicides and herbicides and pesticides, and that the conventional produce may have been. But if you need a simple rule, the one I use is thin skin. If you buy your thin skin produce organic, I'm talking potatoes, I'm even talking apples, I'm certainly talking apricots and peaches. If you buy those organic, then the synthetic chemical pesticides, herbicides, fungicides, and so on have a less chance of having crossed that barrier. And therefore, buying thin skin organic is the way to go. Buying conventional thin skin, you're risking those pesticides.
What about milks and meats?
Milk, when you buy organic, you're subverting an entire industry. You're trying to say, look, I know you would have treated the cow with bovine stimulating growth hormone and that you would have treated with antibiotics to prevent mastitis and given antibiotics, even as growth promoters, even when the cow didn't have mastitis. But buying organic milk, I'm going to avoid those antibiotics. I know the hormone doesn't make any difference because the cow would make that anyway, but I'm avoiding the antibiotic residues when I buy organic milk, and that's a good thing. Anybody concerned with antibiotic resistance in medical practice ought to be advising his patients or her patients when they can and can afford it to buy organic milk.
You know, John, I could talk to you all day long because this is a subject that's extremely fascinating to me, but we are out of time. I appreciate you being with me today, and I really look forward to maybe doing another segment like this in the near future.
Anytime, Jim. People can lose pounds, not flavor. That's our message.
Again, your website is chefmd.com, but you have a couple other ones, don't you?
My personal website is drjohnlapuma.com. I'm always happy to talk to people who email me. And on chefmd.com, free video, free recipes every week, free shopping lists as well. We want to make it easy, fun, and free for people to eat healthfully with great flavor.
Thanks again for this time, Dr. John LaPuma, author of Chef MD's Big Book of Culinary Medicine. Remember, you heard this on Health Buzz, the podcast at www.jim.md. In the upper right-hand corner, you'll see the subscribe button. Also, just below that, you'll see our sponsor, Aveeno Baby. Click on that and help me out to keep this thing going. Till next time, take care.